Chapter 23. Alone in the dim pre-dawn moonlight of not yet morning, Kira went down to the dyer's garden that had been so carefully created for her. There, gently patting earth around the moist roots, she planted the woad. Gather fresh leaves from first year's growth of woad. She repeated the words that Annabella had said, and soft rainwater, that makes the blue. She carried water from a container in the shed and soaked the soil around the fragile plants. It would be a long time until the first year's growth. She would not be here to gather those leaves. When the plants were watered, she sat alone, knees to chin, and rocked herself back and forth as the sun began to rise, a faint pink stain creeping up the eastern rim of the sky. The village was still silent. She tried to put it all together in her mind, to make some sense of it. But there was no sense, no meaning at all. Her mother's death, a sudden, violent, isolated illness. Such things were rare. Usually illness struck the village, and many were taken. Perhaps her mother had been poisoned? But why? Because they wanted Kira. Why? So that they could capture her gift, her skill with the threads. And Thomas, his parents too? And Joe's? Why? So that all their gifts would be captive. Despairing, Kira stared through the early dawn at the garden. The plants glimmered and shifted in the breeze, some of them still in autumn start bloom. Now, finally, woad had been added to give her the blue she had yearned for. But someone else would harvest the first leaves. Somewhere nearby, her father slept, gathering strength to return with his newfound daughter to the village where healing people lived in harmony. Together, he and Kira would steal away and leave the only world she had ever known. She looked forward to the journey. She would not miss the squalor and noise they would leave behind. She would long for Matt and his mischief, she thought sadly, and Thomas, so serious and dedicated, she would miss him too. And Joe. She smiled at the thought of the little singer who had waved so proudly to the crowd at the gathering. Thinking of Joe, Kira remembered something. In the confusion and excitement of her father's arrival, it had disappeared from her mind. Now the awareness and the horror came back, and she gasped. The muted clanking sound that had puzzled her during the celebration. She could almost hear it again in her mind, a dragging of metal. She had glimpsed its cause at the beginning of the second half of the song. Then, at the conclusion, after the singer had acknowledged the people's applause, after Joe had scampered happily down from the stage, he moved toward the steps to descend and walk down the aisle. He lifted the robe slightly at the top of the steps, and from her seat at the edge of the stage, Kira saw his feet. They were bare and grotesquely misshapen. His ankles were thickly scarred, more damaged than her father's face. They were caked and scabbed with dried blood. Fresh, bright blood trickled in narrow rivulets across his feet. It all came from the raw, festering skin, infected and dripping, around the metal cuffs with which he was bound. Between the thick ankle cuffs, dragging heavily as he made his way slowly from the stage, was a chain. He lowered the robe then, and she saw nothing more. Perhaps, she thought, she had imagined it? But watching him as he moved, she heard the sound of the scraping chain against the floor, and she could see behind him a smeared, darkened trail of his blood. Recalling it now, Kira knew, suddenly and with clarity, what it all meant. It was so simple. The three of them, the new little singer who would one day take the chained singer's place, Thomas the carver, who with his meticulous tools wrote the history of the world, and she herself, the one who colored that history, they were the artists who could create the future. Kira could feel it in her fingertips. her ability to twist and weave the colors into the scenes of amazing beauty that she had made all alone before they assigned her the task of the robe. Thomas had told her that once he too had carved astonishing things into wood that seemed to come alive in his hands, and she could hear the high, haunting melody that the child had sung in her magical voice, solitary in her room, before they had forced her from it and given her their own song to sing. The guardians, with their stern faces, had no creative power, but they had strength and cunning, and they had found a way to steal and harness other people's powers for their own needs. They were forcing the children to describe the future they wanted, not the one that could be. Kira watched the garden tremble and move as it slept. She saw the newly planted woad settle in, nestled where she had laid it gently beside the yellow bedstraw.
"Mostly it dies after flowering once," Annabella had said, describing woad. "But sometimes you find a small shoot lives."
It was those small living shoots she had planted, and something in Kira knew, without a doubt, that they would survive. She knew something else as well, and with the realization, she rose from the damp grass to go indoors, to find her father and tell him that she could not be his eyes, that she must stay. Matt was the one who would lead Christopher home. Late at night, they gathered at the edge of the path that led away from the village, the same path that would wind past Annabella's clearing and continue onward for days to the village of the healing people. Matt was prancing about, eager to begin the journey, proud of his role as the leader. Branch, also eager to set off on an adventure, sniffed and wandered here and there.
"I know you be missing me horrid," Matt confided. "And maybe I be gone a long time, because maybe they be wanting me to visit."
He turned to Christopher.
"They got plenty of food all the time? For visitors? And doggies?"
Christopher, smiling, nodded yes. Then Matt took Kira aside to whisper an important secret.
"I know you can't be getting a hubby because of your horrid gimp," he said in a low, apologetic voice.
"It's all right," she reassured him.
He tugged at her sleeve eagerly. "I been wanting to tell you that them other people, them broken ones, they gets married, and I seen a boy there, a two-syllable boy, not even broken, just about the same age as you." "I bet you could marry him," Matt announced in a solemn whisper, "if'n you want to."
Kira hugged him.
"Thanks, Matt," she whispered back. "I don't want to. His eyes be a very amazing blue," Matt said importantly, as if it might matter.
But Kira smiled and shook her head no. Thomas carried the bundle of food they had saved and packed. There, at the beginning of the path, he transferred it to Christopher's strong back. Then the two shook hands. Kira waited silently. Her father understood her decision.
"You will come when you can," he said to her.
"Matt will go back and forth. He will be our tie. And one day he will bring you."
"One day our villages will know each other," Kira assured him.
"I can feel that already." It was true. She could feel the future through her hands, in the pictures her hands were urging her to make. She could feel the broad, undecorated expanse waiting across the shoulders of the robe.
"I have a gift for you," her father told her.
She looked at him, puzzled. He had come empty-handed and had lived in hiding for the past few days. But now he put something soft into her hands, something that had a quality of comfort. She could sense, but could not see in the darkness what it was.
"Threads?" she asked. "A bundle of threads?"
Her father smiled. "I had time, sitting alone, while I waited to return, and my hands are very clever because they have learned to do things unseeing. Bit by bit, I unraveled the fabric of my blue shirt," he explained. "The boy found me another to wear."
"I filched it,"
Matt announced with matter-of-fact pride. "So you will have blue threads," her father went on, while you wait for your plants to come to life.
Goodbye, Kira whispered and hugged her father.
She watched through the darkness as the blind man, the renegade boy, and the bent-tailed dog set off down the path. Then, when she could see them no longer, she turned and walked back to what lay waiting. The blue was gathered in her hand, and she could feel it quiver, as if it had been given breath, and was beginning to live.